stare Grant down but failed. She dropped her chin and muttered, "No one was supposed to get hit."
"Three people have been killed," Grant said.
Nodding, Halleck said,
"That's not my fault. It wasn't supposed to happen that way."
"What kind of nanomachines are they?"
"Gobblers, of a sort. All they're supposed to do is attack vanadium atoms. They told me that would cause only very minor damage, not enough to hurt anyone."
Grant shook his head wearily. "We're living on the edge of vacuum out here. Don't you realize that normal conditions on the moon are a centimeter away from sudden death?" Halleck tried to look defiant, but instead her expression melted into a guilty downcast.
"Why?"
Trudy blurted.
"Why would you want to hurt us?"
Halleck made a bleak smile.
"You don't understand any of this, do you? You don't understand a thing."
"Enlighten us," said Trudy.
Before Halleck could reply, though, Grant interrupted. "I need to know what the nanos are programmed to do, how long they'll remain active, how to deactivate them."
"As I told you, they're programmed to attack vanadium atoms. That's all. The people at the laboratory I used told me that the quantity they gave me could cause pinhole leaks in titanium alloys, produce air leaks. Nothing catastrophic, just enough to cause panic at Farside."
"How long will they be active?" With an almost careless shrug, Halleck said,
"A few weeks, if I remember correctly."
"And they're not deactivated by ultraviolet light, are they?"
"Of course not. There's no built-in way to deactivate them, from what they told me. You have to wait until their programmed lifespan ends."
"That means we'll have to abandon Farside," Grant muttered. "Temporarily, at least."
"I didn't mean for them to cause so much damage," Halleck said, as if apologizing for spilling milk. "I only wanted to slow Professor Ulrich's work."
"But why?" Trudy repeated.
Halleck answered,
"Morgan McClintock humiliated me. I decided that turnabout is fair play."
"Morgan?"
"Carter's father. He's pouring money into Ulrich's program so that Farside can be the first to obtain imagery of New Earth. And why? To hurt me. To make me look bad in the eyes of the IAA, of the whole world."
"That's why McClintock's at Farside?" Grant asked.
"Why else? Carter has no interest in astronomy. He's there to look after his father's interests." "Well, I thought it would be poetic justice if Farside failed. Failed miserably."
"For your own personal satisfaction?"
Trudy was aghast.
"What better reason could there be?" Halleck replied.
"But Grant said, there's big money tied up in the IAA's program. If Farside can do the job, the IAA would drop its program."
"And leave me looking ridiculous," said Halleck.
"And the corporations that are working on your program would have their contracts canceled," Grant added. "They wouldn't like you for that." Halleck glared at him but said nothing. Across the tiny room, Obermann pushed himself to his feet and tottered to the lavatory, still rubbing his jaw. Grant said, "I have to contact Farside and tell the professor what's going on. They'll have to abandon the site for a couple of weeks."
"And go where?"
Trudy asked.
"Cellini won't take us."
"Yes, they will. Now that we know what we're up against, Cellini's safety people can screen each one of us to make sure we're not carrying the gobblers."
"Dr. Cardenas is still at Farside," Trudy recalled. "Maybe she can run the screening operation."
"Good," said Grant. "I'll call the ulcer and tell him that..." He got no farther. Obermann dashed out of the lavatory, a heavy wrench in his hand, and smashed Grant across the back of his head. Grant fell face down to the floor, unconscious, his scalp bleeding heavily. Farside.
"I feel stupid," muttered Harvey Henderson as he smeared machine oil across the face of the Mirror Lab's airlock. Josie Rivera, working alongside him, said, "You'll feel a lot worse if the airlock springs another leak."
10 engineers and technicians were industriously covering the airlock's titanium alloy face with oil. Every man and woman at Farside was coating every titanium surface in the base with oil or margarine or even liquid detergent.
"The ulcer's gone off the deep end," Henderson complained, "ordering us to do this."
Still, he assiduously swept his oil-soaked cloth across the face of the hatch. His hands felt greasy, slimy,
and he knew that the coveralls he was wearing were getting stained with oil. Several of the technicians were on ladders, reaching to the top rim of the hatch, rubbing away and dripping oil down on them. Rivera reminded him, "Dr. Cardenas says the way to stop the nanobugs from eating holes in the titanium is to coat the metal with oil. The bugs attack bare metal. If the metal's covered with oil, the bugs won't bother it."
"That's what she says," Henderson grumbled.
"She's the expert."
Rivera turned to the oil dispenser lying on the floor at her feet and bent down to soak the cloth she was using again. Suddenly she broke into a giggle. "What's funny?" Henderson asked.
"My grandmother," said Rivera, still chuckling. "She worked all her life as a house cleaner. If she could see me now, all my education, my degree in engineering, getting a job on the moon, and here I am doing the same kind of work she did."
Henderson didn't find it funny. "I still feel stupid," he groused. Chris Cardenas stepped into Professor Ulrich's office, looking intently determined despite her faded, wrinkled coveralls. Her golden hair was tied up in a no-nonsense upsweep, and she carried a plastic container tucked under her arm. Carter McClintock, sitting at the table abutting the professor's desk, stared at her. "Dr. Cardenas?" he asked, looking surprised. "What are you carrying?"
"Cooking oil from the cafeteria's kitchen," Cardenas replied with a tight smile.
"Cooking oil?" Ulrich asked from behind his desk. As usual, he was wearing a dark jacket over a turtleneck shirt. His silver-gray hair and beard were combed impeccably.
"For you two gentlemen," said Cardenas, putting the container on the table in front of McClintock. "You can start rubbing down the emergency airlock hatches along the main corridor."
"I?" Ulrich blurted.
"You expect me?"
"Everyone else is working at it," Cardenas said firmly. "Even Edie Elgin's out there swabbing away at the exposed metal parts of the spacesuits hanging in the lockers." McClintock slowly rose from his chair. Like Professor Ulrich, he wore a businessman's jacket and slacks. "I get it." Turning to Ulrich, he explained, "This will be good for the staff, Professor, to see us at work alongside them. Shoulder to shoulder, working together, that sort of thing. I'll get this Elgin woman to take photos of us. Good public relations." Cardenas almost laughed. "I hadn't thought of the morale aspect. I need every hand available in this base. There's a lot of metal that the nanomachines can attack. I just hope we have enough oils and greases to cover all the exposed metal around here." Ulrich slowly stood up and came around his desk, the fingers of one hand brushing the desktop. Very reluctantly, he stepped up to Cardenas.
"Very well," he said, like a man forced into a distasteful chore. "Tell me where you want us to work."
"Down the main corridor. Cover the emergency airlock hatches and any other exposed metal surfaces you see."
"I'll work with you, Professor," said McClintock. "We'll be a team."
Ulrich hesitated. He asked Cardenas,
"Have you heard anything from Simpson? I thought he'd gone out to Korolev to confront Mrs. Halleck."
Cardenas shook her head.
"No, not a word from Grant. I wonder what's going on out there."
Korolev. Grant came to slowly. His head thundered with pain. His vision was blurred. He squeezed his eyes shut, then opened them again. Trudy's face came into focus, taut and white with anxiety. She was bending over him, holding a towel or something to the back of his head.
"What happened?" he asked thickly.
Trudy replied, "Oberman found a wrench from the tool closet in the lab and hit you with it."
Grant tried to sit up, but the world swam dizzily around him, and his guts heaved.
"Stay down, Grant," Trudy urged. "You must have a concussion. Maybe he fractured your skull."
Where is he?"
"He ripped up the sleeves on our suits. The emergency suits in the locker, too. We can't go outside. We're stranded here."
Grant saw that she was trying to control herself, trying to hold down the fear, the panic.
"It figures," he said, his voice weak from the pain. "They don't want any witnesses. Halleck told us too much."
"Then they put on their suits and left," Trudy went on. "They just went into the airlock a second ago."
With an effort, Grant focused his eyes on the airlock control pad. He saw its light flick from green to red.
"They've gone outside," he said.
"Nate was really distressed, kind of wild.
He said he's taking Mrs. Halleck to Gagarin.